I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
My recent election is a mandate to completely and totally reverse a horrible betrayal and all of these many betrayals that have taken place, and to give the people back their faith, their wealth, their democracy, and indeed their freedom. From this moment on, America's decline is over.
President Donald Trump was sworn in Monday as the nation's 47th president. Within hours, Trump granted pardons to over 1,500 people involved in the January 6th insurrection. Trump signed dozens of other executive orders, including withdrawing the United States from the Paris Climate Agreement, rolling back protections for transgender people, and declaring a national emergency on the southern border, clearing the way for deploying U.S. troops inside the country.
First, I will declare a national emergency at our southern border. All illegal entry will immediately be halted, and we will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came.
We'll look at Donald Trump's first day back in the White House, as well as President Biden's last-minute decision to commute the sentence for Indigenous activist Leonard Peltier. After half a century behind bars, he's going home. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Donald J. Trump has been sworn in as the 47th president of the United States. Chief Justice John Roberts administered the oath of office inside the Capitol after Monday's inaugural proceedings were moved indoors because President Trump said it was too cold outside.
During every single day of the Trump administration, I will very simply put America first.
CEOs of tech giants were given prime positions at Trump's inauguration, including Tesla, X, and SpaceX CEO Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, Meta's Mark Zuckerberg, billionaire Amazon Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, Apple's Tim Cook, and Google's Sundar Pichai. Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders commented, "When the three wealthiest men in America sit behind Trump at his inauguration, everyone understands that the billionaire class now controls our government," Sanders said. During his inaugural address, Trump declared a national emergency at the southern border, saying his administration's top priority would be mass deportations of, quote, millions and millions of criminal aliens, unquote. Trump also said he would reintroduce his Remain in Mexico policy for asylum seekers, and he rescinded a Biden-era interagency task force set to reunite families separated at the border during Trump's first term. We'll have more on that story later in the broadcast. Just moments after Trump took office, the Customs and Border Patrol's CBP One smartphone app, which provides a path for people to apply for asylum at the U.S. border, stopped working. All appointments to hear claims for refugee status have been canceled. President Trump also set up a return to his first administration's travel ban on citizens from several predominantly Muslim nations, issuing an order directing a 60-day study to come up with a list of countries. Meanwhile, on Monday, the Senate approved the Lake and Riley Act, a bill to mandate immigration detention for undocumented immigrants charged with crimes, including nonviolent offenses. 12 Democratic senators joined Republicans voting for the bill. That follows 48 House Democrats who sided with Republican Congress members to approve the legislation. Monday's inauguration took place inside the U.S. Capitol Rotunda, the same spot where Trump supporters staged an insurrection on January 6, 2021, in a violent attempt to keep him in power after he lost the 2020 election. Just hours after Trump took the oath of office, Trump pardoned or commuted the sentences of all his supporters charged in the January 6 Capitol insurrection. He's also seeking to dismiss hundreds of pending cases.
So this is January 6th, and these are the hostages, approximately 1,500 for a pardon.
Proud Boys leader Enrique Tarrio, who was convicted of seditious conspiracy and sentenced to 22 years in prison for his role in planning the insurrection, is set to be released from prison following the sweeping pardons. Joe Biden granted clemency Monday to longtime political prisoner and indigenous activist Leonard Peltier in a surprise move in the final minutes of his presidency. Under terms of his release from federal prison, the 80-year-old Peltier must live under house arrest. We'll have more on this later in the broadcast with the NDN Collective's Nick Tilson, who helped lead the campaign for Peltier's clemency and saw him yesterday. As he was exiting the office, President Biden also pardoned five more members of his own family, saying they did nothing wrong, but that he feared reprisal by the Trump administration. During his inaugural address Monday, President Trump vowed to declare a national energy emergency in order to fulfill his campaign pledge to, quote, drill, baby, drill. Trump then proceeded to sign executive orders opening Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, or ANWR, for oil and gas exploration, lifting a pause on new liquefied natural gas exports, pledging to streamline permitting for energy and mining projects, and revoking a Biden-era goal of transitioning to electric vehicles, or EVs. And for the second time, President Trump has withdrawn the United States from the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement. As he signed the order, Trump said, quote, the United States will not sabotage our own industries while China pollutes with impunity, unquote. That prompted this response from China's foreign ministry.
China is concerned about the U.S. announcement that it will withdraw from the Paris Agreement. Climate change is a common challenge facing all mankind. No country can stay out of it, and no country can be immune to it.
Trump's return to office has alarmed climate activists worldwide. On Monday, protesters in London unfurled a 100-meter-wide banner across from the Houses of Parliament.
It says Trump climate genocide, and it's to get over the point that the election of a climate denier to be the most powerful man in the world is going to have dreadful consequences.
President Trump has ordered the U.S. withdraw from the U.N.'s World Health Organization, the WHO, a move health experts say could undermine the global response to the next pandemic. Other executive orders issued by Trump on day one include a rollback of policies around DEI and LGBTQ rights, reflecting the mounting right-wing attack on transgender communities. One order states, quote, agencies will cease pretending that men can be women and women can be men when enforcing laws that protect against sex discrimination, unquote. Another order seeks to rename the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America, and Alaska's Denali, the highest peak in North America, to Mount McKinley, the name it was known by until President Obama changed it in 2015. The order's no bearing on what names are used for the sites internationally. Trump also reversed a Biden executive order barring the use of deadly chokeholds and no-knock warrants by federal law enforcement, and a Biden order that sought to wind down the Justice Department's use of private prisons. Trump also revoked Biden's removal last week of Cuba from the U.S. state sponsors of terrorism list. On Monday, the Senate unanimously confirmed Marco Rubio as the new Secretary of State and Trump's first cabinet member. He's the first Latino to hold the top diplomatic post. Rubio's a staunch supporter of Israel, defending its devastating assault on Gaza during his confirmation hearing last week. He also repeatedly touted his hawkish position towards China, which has imposed sanctions against Rubio. Meanwhile, Republicans on the Senate Armed Services Committee Monday voted to advance Pete Hegseth's nomination for defense secretary to the Senate floor. Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren, a member of the Armed Services Committee, blasted her Republican colleagues for, quote, rushing through the most unqualified nominee for U.S. Secretary of Defense in modern history, unquote. Hegseth has been accused of domestic violence, rape, being drunk on the job, Islamophobia, and mismanaging a nonprofit's funds, too, in fact, among other things. In Gaza, civil defense workers say they've discovered the bodies of 137 people buried under the ruins of Palestinian homes, schools and businesses in the hours since the ceasefire deal took effect Sunday. The grisly discoveries are only the first of what the Palestinian Civil Defense Agency estimates to be 10,000 bodies trapped under the rubble covering Gaza following 15 months of Israeli bombardment. Asam al-Nabi is spokesperson for the Gaza municipality.
There are still thousands of bodies trapped under the rubble. Of course, the municipal authorities have been working with other departments to support the cleanup. We hope to uncover the victims' remains in the next few days. However, our success heavily relies on the introduction of heavy equipment. Gaza City is the largest city in the Gaza Strip, but its current engineering machinery is also very limited, making it impossible to carry out the necessary work.
In his first remarks on Gaza since retaking the White House, President Trump said Monday he's not confident the ceasefire will remain in place. Trump said he plans to lift the Biden administration's pause on U.S. deliveries of 2,000-pound bombs to Israel. And he rescinded Biden-era sanctions on far-right Israeli settlers accused of violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Trump said Gaza appeared to be a massive demolition site that should be rebuilt.
You know, Gaza is interesting. It's a phenomenal location. On the sea, best weather. You know, everything's good. It's like some beautiful things could be done with it, but it's very interesting. But some fantastic things could be done with Gaza.
Former Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy said Monday he'll leave his position of co-chair of Trump's incoming Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, and will mount a campaign to become governor of Ohio. According to Politico, though, DOGE co-chair Elon Musk made it known in recent days that he wanted Ramaswamy out. Three lawsuits filed in federal court Monday accused DOGE of violating federal transparency laws. A fourth lawsuit filed by the Center for Biological Diversity seeks DOGE-related records under the Freedom of Information Act. On Monday, Elon Musk stoked outrage when he appeared to make a Sieg Heil Nazi salute twice, as he thanked Trump supporters at an inaugural rally in Washington, D.C.'s Capital One Arena.
And I just want to say thank you for making it happen. Thank you.
In response, New York Congressmember Gerald Nadler wrote on Musk's social media platform X, quote, I never imagined we would see the day when what appears to be a Heil Hitler salute would be made behind the presidential seal. This abhorrent gesture has no place in our society and belongs in the darkest chapters of human history. I urge all of my colleagues to unite in condemning this hateful gesture for what it is, anti-Semitism, Congressmember Nadler said. And Cecile Richards, former president of Planned Parenthood, fierce defender of reproductive rights, has died at the age of 67 in a battle with brain cancer. Richards was a labor and voting organizer before leading Planned Parenthood from 2006 to 2018, helping fend off Republican attacks on abortion in red states. Last November, Richards was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Joe Biden. She was the daughter of the pioneering Texas Democratic Governor Ann Richards. Cecile Richards spoke on Democracy Now! Many times, including in July of 2018, after then-President Trump nominated Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court as part of the far-right plan to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Roe versus Wade didn't create the idea of abortion. Abortion existed before it was legal. It was simply unsafe, and young, healthy women died routinely in emergency rooms across this country. I still meet doctors who can tell me they remember doing their residencies and their rotations, seeing women die. So the point is now, I think what the president is saying is we're going to actually now say that women may be safe in some states, but in a lot of states they won't be. My home state of Texas, where they actually have basically tried to outlaw abortion almost completely, we're going to go back to a day in which women had to go across the border or take things into their own hands. It's a very scary time for women.
That was Cecile Richards speaking in 2018. Now Justice Kavanaugh swore in J.D. Vance as vice president. Cecile Richards just died at the age of 67 on inauguration morning. To see our interviews with Cecile Richards over the years, go to democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan, and our deepest condolences on the death of your mom, Florinda. It was such an honor to learn about her life and to be here with you in New York for her funeral.
Thanks so much, Amy, and for the support of all the DN staff. And it's great to be back. Welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
President Donald Trump was sworn in Monday as the nation's 47th president. The inauguration took place inside the U.S. Capitol, the same spot where Trump's supporters staged an insurrection January 6, 2021, in a violent attempt to keep him in power after he lost the 2020 race to Joe Biden. Hours after Monday's inauguration, Trump granted full, complete, and unconditional presidential pardons to over 1,500 people involved in the January 6 insurrection. He also commuted the sentences of 14 members of the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers, many of whom had been convicted of seditious conspiracy. Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes had his 18-year sentence commuted. He was freed earlier today. Proud Boys leader Enrique Tarrio received a full pardon. He had been sentenced to 22 years in prison. Trump signed the pardons Monday night.
So this is January 6th. These are the hostages. Approximately 1,500 for a pardon.
Yes.
Full pardon.
Full pardon or commutation?
Full pardon. We have about six commutations in there where we're doing further research.
Okay.
So this is a big one. Anything you want to explain about this? We hope they get him. We hope they come out tonight, frankly.
The scope of Trump's pardons surprised many in Washington. Just last week, 9 days ago, Trump's vice president, J.D. Vance, told Fox News people who committed violence on January 6 shouldn't be pardoned.
If you committed violence on that day, obviously you shouldn't be pardoned. And there's a little bit of a gray area there, but we're very much committed to seeing the equal administration of law. And there are a lot of people, we think, in the wake of January the 6th who were prosecuted unfairly. We need to rectify that.
We're joined now by Jeff Charlotte, journalist, author, professor of English and creative writing at Dartmouth College in New Hampshire. His latest book, The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. Jeff Charlotte, take it from the top for us. Explain what just happened yesterday, the blanket pardon of 1,500, even though you have J.D. Vance, in fact, Trump himself, saying that they were going to weigh these one by one.
What it is the worst case scenario. And I think what you emphasize, the expansiveness of the pardon, the glee with which the pardon was issued is striking. And I think it's easy for people to say, well, he'd been talking about this. We knew this was coming. But it's important to remember that the first lie of fascism is always its own inevitability. And we heard J.D. Vance wavering. And if you were following Trump on the campaign trail, there was always these nods. We now know, of course, that the nods were not to any actual belief that violence against police that led to the death of police was a problem. It was Trump feeling out how far he could go. And yesterday he shows he felt he could go all the way with this complete, total pardon and framing of what happened on January 6th as, in fact, a part of the sacred violence, the part of the noble myth of American history, one of his so-called liberation days.
And Jeff, the order begins with a roll call of heroes calling out the leaders by name, 14 of them. Could you talk about that and what that signifies in your view?
I read the executive order. You see me laughing, but it's this sort of, again, how far will the fascism go? The 14, it begins with a list of 14 names, men like Joe Biggs, Ethan Nordine. Some of these guys on that list are very, very violent people. And these were the planners. These were the planners of a coup. These were the people who had the idea of overthrowing the United States government, or so the old conviction held. But what's notable is that number, 14. Perhaps it's a coincidence that he chose only 14, but that is a clear echo and is being heard in white supremacist circles as an echo of the so-called 14 words. This is this kind of slogan about saving the future for white children that is kind of a motto of the far right. So it's a little bit like Elon Musk's Sieg Heil salute yesterday. You can argue over whether or not it was intentional. What I can't help but notice is Elon Musk not saying it wasn't intentional. And I haven't seen any pushback from the White House to the neo-Nazis who are celebrating the 14 leaders' symbols to them of the 14 words.
Just ask you something before Juan asks another question, just on the Sieg Heil salute. And you have Nadler and others, the Congress members, saying this is a clear Sieg Heil salute. There was a meme going around that shows him in that salute, his hand and his arm out. And it says, you're going to hear from people that Elon Musk did the Roman salute here. And that's true. He's done it before. But that's not exculpatory. The Roman salute was adopted by Mussolini and Italian fascists. It was then adopted by Hitler and the Nazis, Professor Charlotte.
It's true. But I think in some ways, though, this is the kind of the trap that's being laid out for us. And I think it is, as ugly as the 14 words in the salute are, it's important for us to focus on the content, not the cosplay. The reality is, was that number 14 intentional or not? Was that salute meant as such or not? We can argue over that. That gives them a chance to deny it and to persuade some, well, this is all overstatement. While we're overlooking the fact of the pardon of 1,500 violent people who attacked the Capitol, we had people bringing guns, we had people explosive devices. Pardoned yesterday was a man who essentially attempted to tear a cop's head off. He had the cop's head trapped in a door, and their idea was to pull it off. Now, look at what some of these people are saying today. Again, this is the content. This isn't the cosplay. They're saying, first thing I'm doing now that I'm pardoned is, because some of them are already out of jails, I can get my guns back. One prominent January 6er who was pardoned, a reporter for the far-right website The Blaze, said time for some ex parte communication with the judge in his case. They're free to do that now. And so 14, accident or not, it's certainly being received as such. But what we can't debate is that other number, 1,500.
And the significance of Ed Martin, the interim U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, the jurisdiction that oversaw many of these cases, himself a January 6th activist?
Yeah, Ed Martin is now put in a legal position overseeing the position that was sort of overseeing these cases. It's like the old Hair Club for Men. You know, he's not just the president. He's a client. He was there. He gave a speech on January 5th. He talked about being there on January 6th. He was not charged with anything, but he did talk about being there. And he since became an activist, and not just an activist, a really ardent activist. activist. In fact, he went to one of Trump's resorts to present an award to one January 6er. You might have seen the pictures of him. This is a guy who liked to style himself with a Hitler mustache and a Hitler haircut, who blamed COVID-19 on a Jewish conspiracy. He, Ed Martin, now this now government official, described this man as an extraordinary leader. And this is the kind of person who we want to give awards. But again, we look at that's the outrage, but we look at the content, not the cosplay. And we look at the structure of this executive order combined with the executive order supposedly putting an end to weaponization of politics. You have one saying crimes that are committed on behalf of the leaders. And tasering a cop till he has a heart attack is this is not a gray area, are unprosecutable. And in the other saying, we're going to go after those people who have prosecuted them. And it's expanding. Already, you're seeing calls on the right for an investigation of politicians who weren't preemptively pardoned by Joe Biden. For instance, D.C. Mayor, Washington Mayor Muriel Bowser, who they are accusing of now holding hostage those January 6ers who have not yet been released. And it's going right into this kind of sort of white power narrative, the black mayor of a majority black city holding hostage their mostly white American heroes.
Jeff Charlotte, we want to thank you for being with us. Journalist and author, professor of English and creative writing at Dartmouth College. His latest book, The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. When we come back, we look at Trump's threat to retake the Panama Canal and to declare a national emergency at the southern border. Are we going to see detention camps at military bases around the country? Stay with us. Patti Smith. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. During Monday's inauguration, Donald Trump repeated his threat to retake the Panama Canal. The U.S. controlled the waterway since the early 20th century, but in 1977, President Jimmy Carter signed a landmark treaty to give Panama control of its canal. This is Trump speaking Monday.
We have been treated very badly from this foolish gift that should have never been made. And Panama's promise to us has been broken. The purpose of our deal and the spirit of our treaty has been totally violated. American ships are being severely overcharged and not treated fairly in any way, shape, or form. And that includes the United States Navy. And above all, China is operating the Panama Canal. And we didn't give it to China. We gave it to Panama. And we're taking it back.
That was President Trump in his inaugural address, standing in the Capitol Rotunda, where Jimmy Carter just lay in state, who had given the control of the canal back to Panama. I believe it was the first time in a century that a president in an inaugural address talked about seizing more land. Juan Gonzalez, can you talk about the significance of this?
Yeah, Amy, I think not only was it audacious of Trump to claim he's going to take back the canal. But he was his statement just before that clip that 38,000 Americans died building the Panama Canal is grossly false. The fact is that during the construction of the canal from 1904 to 1914, a far smaller number of people died, about 5,600. But most of those people were not Americans. They were Black West Indian laborers who were imported by the Panama Canal Company. Only about 350 white Americans died in the construction of the canal. That's about 100 times less than what Trump claimed in his speech. And most importantly, very few Americans are aware that the federal government, specifically Teddy Roosevelt, had to engineer and bankroll the creation of the country of Panama. Panama was then a province of Colombia, but Colombia was refusing to grant the United States sovereignty over the Panama Canal Zone, which it demanded. And so Roosevelt actually bankrolled an uprising